Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Allison Stewart, and you are listening to All of It. This is an historic day for our nation. Today, the House of Representatives is set to take a vote on impeaching President Donald Trump, which would make him the first president in American history to be impeached twice. After the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th, in which pro-Trump rioters attempted to halt the certification of Joe Biden's electoral victory, many Americans are feeling like they understand each other less than ever. And they have a lot of questions about how exactly we got to this moment. One man has taken it upon himself to read just about everything there is to read about President Trump and the last 4 years, in the hopes that it might give us all some deeper understanding, not necessarily about what happened, but how we all thought about it. Carlos Lozada is the nonfiction book critic for The Washington Post and a Pulitzer Prize winner. He has read some 150 books written about President Trump and America under a Trump presidency. He compiled his findings into one concise, funny, and illuminating volume titled, What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. We spoke to Carlos Lozada on another historic day for our nation, Thursday, November 5th, 2 days post-election with still no result. We also asked our listeners to call in and share what books they had read that helped put the past 4 years in perspective. And as always, they had a lot of great recommendations. I began my conversation with Carlos by asking about that particular week, election week. I wanted to know if there was something that he'd read, either about President Trump or America during his tenure, that had played out during that week.
I would cite a book called Unmaking the Presidency, Donald Trump's War on the World's Most Powerful Office by Susan Hennessy and Benjamin Wittes. And what they focus on is the way that Donald Trump has very overtly violated a lot of the kind of widely understood norms of presidential conduct and behavior. And in the book, they emphasize the history of where those norms came from and why they make sense. But for example, this week, simply watching the manner in which the president ahead of time questioned the legitimacy of the vote and suggested that the election was being stolen from him is precisely one of those norms of presidential conduct that he seems to have no problem just bypassing.
There have been so many descriptions or descriptors of Donald Trump these past years, a reality TV president, a strong man. What's a frame that an author has used to describe Trump's character and his behavior you thought was useful in understanding him?
Mm-hmm. I would highlight two books. One is called Audience of One, and it's written by James Poniewozik, who's the chief television critic at the New York Times. And he basically looks at Trump through the prism of television. He says that Donald Trump is the most important character in the history of TV. And that, of course, doesn't flow solely from his time on The Apprentice, but also in the sort of obsessive manner in which he's focused on television coverage of himself over the past 4 years. Another version of a book that offers a kind of novel frame is called Toddler in Chief by Daniel Dresner, who's a Tufts University political scientist, and he suggests that Trump displays many of the characteristics of young kids, the temper tantrums, the mood swings, the excessive screen time. All those ways are a manner in which this author has tried to understand the president.
Carlos, let's check in with some fellow readers. We've got Joel on line one. Joel, thanks for calling in. What did you read that made an impression on you?
Hi, thank you. First of all, I got to give Carlos some kudos for doing all that. There's so much out there, and it's so fascinating, and it's so tempting, and I read the Mary Trump book and a bunch of others. But the one I want to talk about is Craig Unger's House of Trump, House of Putin. I love reading about the international mafia, but the Russian mafia is very special. It's taken over the government of that country. It's in all the formerly governmental utilities, enriched itself enormously, created shell companies, and they realized that investing in Trump condos was a great way to launder money. Trump didn't ask any questions. Mm-hmm. So he's very close to a lot of the most sleazy people in the world, who are also very tight with Putin, who, by the way, assassinates his critics. So this is before Trump became president. So when they saw that he was running, they saw, oh, my God, this is a way to really get into that market that's so open, that's so unregulated, the U.S. market. And so they did it. And he's close to people like Felix Sater, these very, very violent and corrupt person who's also close with Putin. So the whole Russian influence on our elections is really kind of a footnote to the way Trump is so in bed with these people. So that's the book spends almost half of it talking about the structure of the Russian mafia before they even get to Trump.
Oh, that's so interesting. Joel, thank you so much for calling in. Carlos, did you want to add anything?
Yes, I unfortunately did not read House of Trump, House of Putin by Craig Unger. And it's, you know, you can only read so much in this job. And that's one of the worst things when you see these books that, that pass you by. Two books I would highlight that I think offer insight into the Trump and Russia relationship. One is simply called Trump Russia, A Definitive History by Seth Attena, which tries to explore all those business ties between Trump and Russian financial interests over the decades, you know, long before anyone was worried about any meeting with Russian lawyers at Trump Tower. And another is called The Future is History by Masha Gessen, which really gives an incisive exploration of what it is like to live under Putin's regime and how the former Soviet Union morphed into this sort of kleptocratic regime under Vladimir Putin. So those two would be ones that might complement the Unger book.
Joel, you have your reading in case you haven't need more books on your list. Let's go to Mayat on line two. Hi, Mayat. Thanks for calling in. What book did you read this past year about the Trump administration or Trump era?
Yes, good afternoon to the beloved radio family and to everyone. First of all, I must recommend, I love that first caller because that is a seminal book to read by Unger, House of Trump, House of Putin. You definitely want to read that. But I read that one of the first books that came out, Fire and Fury, okay, and if you recall, the author whose name I'm blanking on got special access to the White House before he wrote that book, and maybe you can help me out with his name, which
I think
I
was Michael
can't
Wolf.
Think of. And then, thank you. And he had unusual access that surprised everyone after the fact of the publication. And another one was the first Bob Woodward book, Fear. Fear, and that was highly significant because it framed the whole posture of using fear. And there's an interesting quote where Trump says, you know, I can't say the quote, but where he deals with the idea of the use of fear toward the population, which is a type of political fascism. Okay. Love your program, Allison.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. Our guest is Carlos Lozada, nonfiction book critic of The Washington Post. He's written a book called What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. We've got a lot of people on the phones. We have big readers who listen to this show, Carlos. But I want to get into a few more things, and readers, callers, we're going to get to you. But something that has happened in the past 2 days, Carlos, is we've had a lot of callers call in and say how sad and disappointed they are that so many people in the country voted for Donald Trump a second time. And then we've seen Trump supporters sort of in disbelief about Biden's strong showing. So what is a book that a hardcore Democrat could read to understand his fellow Republicans more? And what's something that Republicans could read to understand their fellow Americans who happen to be Democrats?
That's a great question. I think that the polarization of the country along the lines that you describe will only be hardened by the results of the election, because even if, say, Joe Biden wins, Donald Trump still received many million more votes than he got last time. So you sort of see people really entrenched in their corners. There's a few books that I would recommend to in a bipartisan way to try to understand mm-hmm. that phenomenon. One is called Divided We Fall by David French, which is just out, and imagines these sort of eerily realistic scenarios of how the country could split, not just politically and culturally, but actually in reality, geographically, if these divides are not conquered or at least better managed. And the author comes from a more conservative point of view, but I think it would be good reading for all sides of this. And another I'll pick that comes from a more liberal point of view is Ezra Klein's book, Why We're Polarized, that attempts to do the same thing, attempts to explain how it is that being Republican or being Democrat are no longer just political identities, but they track so closely now with our cultural, economic, class, sometimes even racial identities, mm-hmm. that the divide has gotten that much stronger. And so I think I would recommend to both Republicans and Democrats books like these to try to help understand the divide that they embody.
Let's go to Robin in Westwood, New Jersey on line 7, because her, I'm assuming Robin's a her, might be a hey, recommendations sort of follow up on something adjacent to this conversation about being divided. Robin, thanks for calling in.
Well, hi, thanks, and sorry to disappoint you. I'm actually a he.
I saw it. I said, this could go either way. Hi, Robin. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it happens all the time. I was actually less really interested in reading about Donald Trump's because he's so one-dimensional. I was actually more interested in reading about the average Trump supporter. And I hail originally from Pittsburgh, so you can probably understand where the background of this was. And I found a number of books that I've been reading over the past couple of years that have been just absolutely wonderful on insights. One was called White Trash, The Story of 400 Years of Class in America. And it's just absolutely a magnificent scholarly understanding of what really started this country. The other one was called Born Fighting by Jim Webb, who was a former Bush. He was in Bush's cabinet, George W. Bush. And it's about the history of the Scots-Irish. And if you really want to understand where the cultural impact is in the United States, you have to really understand about who the Scots-Irish were and how they had such an important impact on the history of the United States. I followed that up with Hillbilly Elegy, which sort of takes that Scots-Irish story to the present day. And then there's Jesus and John Wayne, which is absolutely was stunning to really get underneath the evangelical support. And when you look at it, it connects directly to Born Fighting and White Trash. So all of these things are interconnected. And probably the one that was underneath all of this that really does give, I think, and someone mentioned something about something similar to this earlier, which is a Neil Postman's classic, Amusing Ourselves to Death, which was written back in the 1980s, but it really kind of tells the story of how television has transformed the national conversation and changed the epistemology, and of which Donald Trump is the person who came out of that.
Robin, that's a heck of a syllabus you just created there. Thank you so much for calling in. And you know where I'm going with this, Carlos, because the first chapter of your book is Heartlandia. And all that's this whole genre that Robin just described.
Uh-huh. Although I'm fearing for my job now. I think Robin's coming after me. That's so wonderful. I mean, I get paid to read all these books. I mean, he's just doing it on his own, which is terrific. I have read a few of those, not all of them. I read White Trash and I read Hillbilly Elegy, and I think I agree they're useful in very different ways to understand one segment of Trump support. Now, a ton of journalists and scholars sort of descended upon,
yes,
you know, the industrial Midwest or the Rust Belt trying to understand the Trump voters starting in 2016. Two additional books that I will highlight that have been useful to me. One is Sarah Smarsh. Her book is called Heartland,
so
a memoir of working hard and being broke in the richest country on earth. And this is oversimplifying it, but it's almost, if Hillbilly Elegy is a vision of this demographic from the right, Heartland is somewhat from the left. And it's based in Kansas and just beautifully written. I would strongly recommend that book. Another is more academic, but very helpful, We're Still Here by Jennifer Silva, who spent a lot of time in mining communities in Pennsylvania leading up to the 2016 election. And she, to me, she showed that more than wondering if, you know, oh, these voters are prejudiced or these voters have, you know, economic struggles, and as if those two explanations are the only things that could possibly animate someone to vote for Trump. She shows how these kinds of struggles actually end up leaving a lot of people thinking that there's no room for them in the political system at all. She spent election day with some of these folks that she was interviewing for her book, and she shows up with her I voted sticker, and they laughed at her. They mocked her for being so naive as to think the political system would be responsive to her preferences. And that's a moment that has absolutely stayed with me and that helps explain this period for me more than some of these other works.
I'm speaking with Carlos Losada, book critic for The Washington Post. We're talking about his new book, What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. And we're taking your calls at 646-435-7280. What books have you read during the Trump era that you want to give a shout out to or tell us why you read them? We'll have more with Carlos and with you, dear listeners, after a quick break. This is All of It. My guest is Carlos Losada. His name of his book is What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. Carlos read more than 150 books about President Trump and about our country during the Trump era. And I think we have to have a conversation about race and about the books that you've read regarding race. You write about one of these books that popped up on a lot of reading lists, a lot of anti-racist reading lists. And you describe white fragility. You say, white fragility reads like a pharmaceutical ad for treating whiteness. Now, I can't tell if that's a positive or a negative review.
I was not a big fan of white fragility, even though that was a book that generated a lot of interest during, especially in the aftermath of the protest this past summer after George Floyd's killing. I felt that there was a sort of circular logic to the book, and a little oversimplified in the sense that if you did not accept or buy into the totality of the author's worldview, well, then you're just exhibiting more white fragility, right? Like it was sort of a non-falsifiable idea. And it seemed to present a very one-dimensional description of not just white Americans, but persons of color as well, who are kind of portrayed in this sort of like hapless, constantly victimized, powerless, you know, worldview and perspective. A book that I appreciated quite a bit more was one that sort of shot to the bestseller list alongside White Fragility. And it was How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram Kendi, in which the author seems more willing, at least in the book, to treat people as individuals and to not attribute individual qualities, whether positive or negative, to vast quantities of people. A book of his that was very useful for me came out a few years ago, called Stamped from the Beginning. And that is a book that shows the history of racist ideas in America, you know, for hundreds of years, and kind of flips the common understanding of racism, and that being, you know, people think that, I decide a certain group is inferior, and therefore I devise policies and practices to mistreat this group. And he suggests that it's really the opposite, that that the policies and practices begin first, and then the ideas are kind of like retrofitted afterwards to justify them. And he shows that at play, you know, over hundreds of years of American history, even pre-colonial history. And so for all the people who went out and bought How to Be an Anti-Racist, I think that the real intellectual grounding of that book is found in Kendi's prior book, Stamped from the Beginning.
Let's go to line 6. I believe it is, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name, but I've read your book. We've had this guest on our show, and she's wonderful. Who am I speaking to? Hello? Line 6? Oh, she obviously, he or she doesn't know who I'm speaking to. Anyway, let's go to Carl on line 7. Carl, you want to recommend, a Michael Lewis book. This is interesting. What are you recommending, Carl?
The Fifth Risk by Michael Lewis. I actually reread it because it was written so early. I read it early in Trump's term and just recently reread it, thinking about the transition, if there is one, from Trump to Biden, and perhaps the way that the Trump administration can mess up the transition away from his administration just as he messed up the transition to his administration.
Thank you so much for calling in, Carl. You know, I wanted to touch on another issue that was big, and I think it was such a huge movement in the past year between coronavirus and all that's been going on with race relations. I mean, you dedicate a chapter about Me Too, which I think is really important. And you wrote, as I read, I found so much that I had not bothered to know, so much that I had the luxury of not even imagining. When you think about this, when you're thinking about this chapter, you focused in on Chanel Miller's memoir, Know My Name, which she was a survivor of a highly publicized rape, which led to the conviction of her attacker, Brock Turner, who served a very light sentence, and the judge was quite lenient on him. Mm-hmm. What was particularly affecting about her memoir?
That was a wonderful memoir. I wouldn't just say it's a great Me Too memoir. It's really has to be up there alongside, you know, any great memoir describing personal human trauma. What stood out for me from that book is just this idea that we talk about survivors, right? And normally people think about a survivor of assault or rape as being someone who survived the incident, that moment, right? What Chanel Miller's book shows so well is how you are surviving every day of your life that follows in ways big and small. And she shows how difficult sort of like even very simple parts of her life turned, you know, in the days and weeks and years that followed, and how she was also reduced to survivor status, right? She felt that for the rest of her life, she was always going to be, you know, the survivor who wrote a book, and how in some way she was defined by that event more than her attacker was. You know, he was in fact defined by what was lost. Like, oh, he had this wonderful career. He was a champion swimmer, and all these things were taken away from him. And as opposed to everything that she lost and that she describes so vividly in this book, this is someone who was sort of born to be a writer and happened to write this story first. And it's just one of those memoirs that I think is gonna stay with me for long after this period.
My guess is Carlos Lozada. The name of his book is What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. Carlos read about 150 books about Trump and about the presidency. Let's go to line nine and Mark, because he's going to take us into a genre or a subset that we haven't talked about yet. Mark, what did you read?
I read a number of books. I have a particular interest in foreign policy, so I want to read John Bolton's book. And talk about towering egos. This is a man who never met a run-on sentence he didn't love. And there was no detail too small for him. And the theme of the book was, it is only I who stand between total destruction of the Western world and Jim Mattis, basically, who was his nemesis within the administration. There is a lot of information in it. There's a lot of detail, way too much detail, but almost every major foreign policy issue that he was involved with was covered. But I want to contrast that to Battlegrounds, which is a book by H.R. McMaster, who was National Security Advisor before Bolton, a very distinguished military thinker, military man. Mm-hmm. And he says in his forward that people wanted him to write about, you know, the gossip, you know, the whole gossip story. And he didn't. He wanted to write about current national security issues in a very thoughtful, very strategic manner. And it's really impressive. And the contrast between these two men who had the same job, right, and their approaches to foreign policy within the Trump administration. I highly recommend Battlegrounds. McMaster is just a brilliant strategic thinker.
Thank you so much for calling in. Carlos, of that subset of insiders who wrote books, which ones do you think really were illuminating? And then which ones were kind of giant run-on sentences about themselves, as our caller described it?
It's interesting because those two books that your caller described are written by the so-called adults in the room, right? You know, people like McMaster and Bolton, and then also James Mattis and others were the individuals who were there and who people thought were going to, in a sense, protect Trump from his own worst instincts. That's very hard to do. It's not clear that the adults succeeded, but it also doesn't always make for riveting reading. One of the books that I enjoyed the most from the sort of insider canon was a book by sort of a mid-level communications official in the Trump White House named Cliff Sims, who just told you what it felt like inside. And to me, that was really useful. There's a hilarious moment when he's describing that first weekend in the White House when they're trying to prepare Sean Spicer to go out and defend the president's claim that his crowd size at the inauguration was bigger than Obama's. And, you know, how they were just pulling numbers out of nowhere. They were just making stuff up. At one point, the computer crashes. They lose all their, you know, all their talking points. It's just a really entertaining, vivid story. One of the books that was most disappointing for me was by the recently revealed anonymous writer, the senior administration official, who ended up being not super senior, and who was supposedly part of some internal resistance to the Trump administration from inside. The problem with that book is that, you know, usually anonymity is granted in order to get more information. That's why journalists sometimes let people be identified just anonymously. Here it justified giving less. The author was so concerned about not revealing his identity, they ended up not saying much. And so the book was just a lot of hand-wringing and lamenting and kind of passing judgment, but without really doing much. And we've, of course, only recently learned that it was a fellow named Miles Taylor who was an official in the Department of Homeland Security. I would count that as probably the most disappointing for me of the insider Trump memoirs.
Who's not yet written a book about this time or about this president that you would like to see write a book, or you think could do a good job?
Yes, I would love to. Let's focus on potential memoirs, for instance. Mm-hmm. I would love to see a memoir by Anthony Fauci that not only describes his efforts fighting coronavirus and dealing with the Trump White House, but also just tells the story of his long Washington and scientific career. I think that would be amazing. I would love to read a memoir by Kirstjen Nielsen, the former director of Homeland Security, who was right in the middle of all the big battles over the family separation policy and immigration disputes. You know, that's a story that I want to know even more about. I sort of don't want to really read a memoir by Robert Mueller, because just given the kind of person he seems to be, I can't imagine that he would say much. And so that's not one that I'm too excited about. And I weirdly want to read, maybe not a memoir, but a book about Jared Kushner in the Trump White House, because he weirdly had his hands in everything, without a lot of substantive expertise for anything. And so he kind of recurs in all these books as someone who has a lot of influence, but not always a lot of insight. And I just want to understand, A, how that happened, but also what the impact was across a bunch of different policy arenas.
That was my conversation with Washington Post nonfiction book critic and Pulitzer Prize winner Carlos Lozada about his book, What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.